In every country in the world, children fall victim of violence and exploitation, experiencing physical, emotional, and sexual abuse.
Can we pretend that airplanes in the night sky are like shooting stars? I could really use a wish right now, wish right now.
Some find themselves at the mercy of human traffickers who enslave them in a world of prostitution, domestic servitude, and bonded labor. On A Shield for the Innocent, host Bademi Nelson reveals the clandestine world of child abuse and human trafficking, breaking the silence that too often surrounds it and giving voice for millions of voiceless children. Join Bademi as she helps form a shield to protect the innocent.
Hello, everyone. My name is Bademi Nelson, and you're very much welcome to another episode of A Shield for the Innocent. This show is focused on creating an abuse and violence-free world for children. In other words, you and I will be forming that protective shield for the children in our neighborhoods and around the world as a result of our appropriate response to the menace of child abuse in our society. Today, we'll be looking at a topic tagged The Catalyst for Child Abuse with focus on the environmental risk factors. In many parts of the world, child abuse has only recently emerged as a social problem. Media exposure of child sex trafficking and employment of minors has heightened public awareness of child maltreatment as a global issue. The Federal Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act, CAPTA, defines child abuse and neglect as any recent act or failure to act on the part of a parent or caretaker, which results in death, serious physical or emotional harm, sexual abuse or exploitation, or an act of failure to act which presents imminent risk of serious harm. So we can see that child abuse can arise from parental or other person's actions or inactions, which eventually can jeopardize the well-being of the child with them or around them. While no specific causes definitively have been identified to lead a parent or a caregiver or other persons to abuse or neglect a child, a research done in 2003 by these groups of authors, the Office on Child Abuse and Neglect in Washington, D.C., Goldman J., Salos M.K., Walcott D., and Kennedy K.Y., have recognized a number of risk factors or attributes commonly associated with child abuse and maltreatment. Children within families and environments in which these factors exist have a higher probability of experiencing abuse. These risk factors are categorized into four groups, namely the parent or caregiver factor, the family factor, the child factor, and the environmental factor. Today we'll be looking at the environmental factor, and we're looking at the factors that bring about issues that pertain to the society in which a child is located or functions. Now, this factor could include low income or the absence of income, the breakdown of family structures, and tolerated or accepted cultural norms of communal violence and aggressive behaviors. Usually, this factor, and I'm still talking about the environmental risk factor, is often found in combination with the other factors that I mentioned. And by that, I mean it complements or is being complemented by those factors such as the child factor, the parent or caregiver factor, and the family factor. And however, we must note that some parents or caregivers who live in environments that may be child abuse prone are not abusive to their children. Now, joining me to talk about this is Jay Sorensen, the president of the Kids First Fund organization. This is a non-profit organization that helps abused and abandoned children. They protect children from abuse. They empower young adults with a positive future. They strengthen families. And they build awareness on child abuse. While Jay enlightens us on this topic, his focus will be on Eastern Europe and the work of his organization in Moldova and Latvia. And Jay, I'd like to welcome you to the show. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I'm always happy to talk about the Kids First Fund.
All right. So let me start by saying that I read about your work in Moldova, and I noticed that you were kind of shocked about the communist mentality that greeted you there. I'd like you to share your opinion about the relationship between communism and child abuse.
You know, I'm not so certain that it's communism per se that is a contributing factor. Communism, of course, typically is a very closed society. It is a society, it is a governmental system that works to suppress, I think, truth. There are other systems other types of governments that do the same thing. And I think any government that works in that manner, contributes to, a environment in which child abuse can become a problem and can become rampant. In the case of Moldova, I think it's something that goes beyond communism or the suppression of truth. I think it's actually a cultural factor that is a legacy of Eastern European culture. I think that parents in this area, notably fathers, literally treat children as property. Now, I think that where this occurs, of course, is in more rural areas, and quite literally, I have seen people treat their property, such as a chair or a farm animal, with more consideration than they would a child. And so I think that there's this cultural thing that the Kids First Fund strives to work with. When you layer on top of that cultural issue, a communist government or some other type of repressive regime, well, that, of course, just doubles the problem.
Mm. Yeah, and when you're looking at dysfunctional cultures, I've talked about that in some of my previous shows, and we look at dysfunctional cultures, and like Jay has said, when you add that to communism, which represses people, represses the ability of people to exercise their rights, child abuse is certainly going to be inevitable in such a situation. Now, I also noticed that the relative poverty level in that country was very disturbing. I realized that a lot of young people, a lot of young adults were affected, and according to your report, these people were aged between 18 and 29 years of age. And I know that people that fall within this age range are very sexually active and are also supposed to be the most productive in the labor sector. Now, I'm beginning to wonder what the impact of this trend of poverty and unemployment has been on child abuse, you know, especially in Moldova.
Well, I think that there are two types of child abuse that the Kids First Fund addresses. One is the sexual abuse of children, and the other one is the physical or emotional abuse of children. Sexual abuse, I think, is a very unique type of condition in that it occurs regardless of economic level. Sexual abuse is a psychological condition. Pedophiles can be poor, and pedophiles can be extremely wealthy. In fact, when they're extremely wealthy, they may be the most dangerous because they have the legal means and the power to help cover up their crimes. Coming back to physical and emotional abuse, this seems to be largely, of course, there are some people who have psychological issues that allow them to be more predisposed to be abusive, but I think that it is also assisted or strengthened by the presence of poverty. So economic poverty, poor conditions, perhaps you could tie to it a lack of education, all contribute to higher levels of physical and emotional abuse.
Okay, and I like the way you differentiated, you know, the types of abuses, the sexual abuse, the physical abuse, the emotional abuse, and also the last one, which is child neglect. And it's important we know that, like Jay has said, this is a very serious issue. And when there is presence of stress, which is associated with poverty, with unemployment, and like you said, lack of education, someone who isn't educated, who has not probably gone to school, it would be impossible for that person to secure or keep a job. So these things would add to stress, would add to you know, emotional trauma, which can incite this people to actually go and assault or abuse a child, either sexually or emotionally or physically or basically just, you know, just neglect the child. And I was wondering, what about the issue of raising children in impoverished, high-risk neighborhoods with unsafe, crowded housing and inadequate daycare. Was that ever a problem for you in Moldova?
You know, what's interesting about Moldova is it seems to be very unique in one particular regard, and that is there has been a tremendous outflow of adults from Moldova. The economic situation, it is a, you know, I will say that it is a, I'm embarrassed to say this, but it's a sad country to visit, because I've never encountered a place where there was such a feeling of hopelessness. Mm-hmm. And this is especially true, you know, this is one of the few governments, you know, after we had the revolutions that occurred in the East in terms of the coming down of the Berlin Wall and the other, in the other former Soviet republics that all broke away from the Soviet Union, or Russia, I guess you could say, and became independent states. Moldova was the only one that actually voted the communists back into power. Mm. And, you know, I don't want to have this become a political,
a political issue.
A political discussion against communism. Mm. But in this particular case, I think that, reverting back to communism, did not help this country economically at all. And so when you talk about, Moldova, you know, there's some fascinating statistics in which I'm scrolling through a report that we did, but there is a large percentage of adults who have left the country. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have both parents leaving the country to work overseas, such as in Italy, to generate income overseas and then to send the receipts back home. Mm-hmm. And so we have in Moldova, we have a large number of children who do not have both parents present, or they have one parent who is present. And oftentimes these children fall through the cracks in terms of daily care and supervision, and that they are also turned over to family members, grandparents, cousins, and any number of different people to provide care while the parent or parents are out of the country.
You know, and it's really a very appalling situation. You know, I saw one of the cases you mentioned in your report about a woman who noticed a 3-year-old child and her 18-month-old sibling, and who, you know, brought the issue up because the parents were not around to really monitor or take care of those kids. And, you know, when I read that story, I was really touched. And at the end of the day, when the government would intervene, because she told them that she saw an 18-month child, they just took the 18-month-old child, you know, into the custody of the care of the government and left the 3-year-old girl all by herself. This is really,
there are plenty of amazing stories like that. And I guess I won't say amazing, but tragic stories. You know, it's a country in which 46% of the population is impoverished. Mm-hmm. And that the percent of population below the international poverty line of $4.13 per person is more than 34% of the population. But here's a very sad statistic. There was a survey that was done, and that the majority of children, a survey back in 2000 found that 40% of young people would leave Moldova forever if they had a chance. And I've never run into a statistic like that before for a country where the young people of the country simply don't want to live there.
You know?
So when you have that condition, how can you build a future for that country? It's a very big challenge.
It is. You know, I think about Moldova, I think about Africa too. You know, it's the same here. You know, when the government has failed, you know, the people and all of that, I really don't want it to be a political discussion like you said earlier, but when you have, you know, a government who has failed the people and you have some situations that are just not right, a lot of young people will just want to abscond, and I tell you that has a negative impact on the economy of that country, on a lot of other issues that pertains to that country. So this is a big deal. And I'd like my listeners to note that most poor people who who we believe abuse their children actually do not abuse their children. But when poverty is associated with other factors like depression, like the use of alcohol or substance abuse, or things like social isolation, these things can increase the likelihood for child maltreatment or abuse. So I just want my listeners to understand that aspect. Now, another disturbing trend had to do with the government. Now, this issue of corruption, you know, it keeps bugging my mind. And I guess that this corruption probably has eroded the governmental capacity of Moldova to provide health care and education. Now, how true is this, and what is the severity of this situation to children in that region?
Well, you know, there's a saying back in the Soviet Union that people would refer to, they would use to describe the economic system. And the saying was, they pretend to pay us and we pretend to work. And the basis behind that was, of course, people were paid in rubles, and you could take your rubles to the store, and there's nothing to buy. And so, you know, it was a pretend type of currency. And in return for being paid in a pretend type of currency, people would work at a very, very low quality. And so I think that this type of condition is endemic. You know, we are doing work in another country, in Latvia, which was a Soviet republic. However, it's far closer to the European Union and has become part of the EU, and has caught up economically is working to catch up very quickly to the rest of Europe. And the last recession, of course, has dealt them a setback in that regard. But this is a country, Latvia is a country that is slowly digging itself out from its past. Moldova is not there yet in terms of, you know, its political processes are still very corrupt. Of course, you know, where our political process is not corrupt. I mean, I have always had the slogan, we receive the government we deserve. And so, you know, I would like to think that democratic systems, such as in Europe and in North America, typically are cleaner. They certainly are not perfectly clean, but they are not so dirty as to be incapable of providing protection for those who are most at risk or unable to protect themselves. And I think it's a real poor indicator of a country in terms of its political stability when there is a class of people, such as children, who simply receive very poor, if any, protection from the state.
And, you know, if you look at things like healthcare, you look at things like education, you know, these are very serious things that the government should really pump in resources into and ensure you have a standardized and you ensure that kids there receive quality education, quality healthcare. But, you know, with the outflow of doctors and teachers who are looking for better opportunities in other European countries, you know, this has almost become, I'll call it tales by moonlight. It's something that is almost unachievable for children in that region, and it's very sad. Now, this issue of fractured family structures and the work approach of government-employed guardians to cases of abused children arising as a result of these dysfunctional family systems is shocking and disturbing at the same time. Can you tell us more about this?
Well, you know, I think that part of this is, you know, one of the first things we do when we consider working in a particular country is we make an assessment of what is there. And if a country is striving to feed its people, you know, I look at there's a hierarchy of needs out there, and that is the basic need is to meet nutritional requirements for people. If a country can't achieve that, we have no business talking about child abuse in that country, because there are concerns that are more immediate and more traumatic that must be dealt with before we reach the luxury, and I use the word luxury, of dealing with the issue of child abuse. And one of the things that we consider is, what is the situation of the police? And if the situation of the police is completely hopeless, meaning that if you call the police, they don't even come, you know, then there's very little you can do to deal with child abuse. Mm-hmm. If there's a desire to reform the police, and if there is a core group of officers who really want to reform the system, then we have hope. And so one of the things that we look at or we consider is, what is the situation of the police? Because the police are the front line. You know, in my country, in the United States, if you call the police on a domestic disturbance, in terms of a husband beating a wife or a parent beating a child, I have the expectation that the police will resolve that situation in terms of the emergency condition. When we first began doing our work in Latvia, that was not the case in Latvia. We had stories in which the police officer was a local police officer in a rural area was called, and by a neighbor who could hear a man, a husband, physically pounding his wife nearly to death. And the neighbor called the police, and the police officer said, "Call us when he's done."
What?
Yeah.
He said that.
Yes. So, I mean, you know, clearly that is a case in which that police officer had zero care for protecting the rights of an individual, even if to the point of them dying, to the point of, you know, a murder being committed. Now, that's a shocking type of example, and it was somewhat rare, but not extremely rare in Latvia. As time has gone by, you know, George Soros, who is a very wealthy individual who lives in the United States and a wonderful philanthropist, has had has sponsored something called the Open Society Institute. And one of their initial objectives is to establish the rule of law in the country. And that is that there's a body of law that is administered, that there's police, that there's courts that function reasonably well to prevent violence from, well, actually to punish violence and hopefully to prevent it from occurring. So I think a rule of law is a crucial component when dealing with the issue of child abuse.
I totally agree with you. And you know, there's this saying in the Bible, you know, "Oh, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do?" And I'll re-quote that statement by putting it in my own way. If the head is destroyed, then I don't see a future for the rest of the body. Now, if the police can't, if they are not dedicated to their jobs, or they really don't know the requirements of their job, that is really a very disturbing occurrence. And I fear for people, not just kids, you know, I just fear for people in that area. We'll be rounding off now because I'll be asking you the last question, and that is, if we are talking about child neglect and abuse, you know, you mentioned that these things were part of the family life in that region, and you just gave us a very grotesque story about that. Now, what other findings did you come across, and what was your response to these findings?
Well, you know, we looked at a tremendous amount of research before we began to do work in Moldova to help us understand what was happening in that country. And I have some interesting statistics that I can share for you that were developed by UNICEF. 25% of children state that their own parents would beat them if they do not listen to their parents. 60% of children report that families do not have money for food, and further that they say that time for playing, friends, or homework because of the work that they must do is not available. This is very disturbing. 1 in 10 children state adults involve them while watching pornographic films.
I saw that in your report, and I almost fainted.
60% of parents say Moldovan parents show insufficient care for their children's hygiene and nutrition. They leave their children without supervision at home. 40% of parents think beating a child is justifiable and an effective measure for correction of poor behavior. Mm. Among parents, 20% feel that family doctors, social workers, and police officers actively help avoid abusing, help actively avoid helping to abuse children. Only 20% are actually engaged in helping to prevent this. You know, we ran across a couple things in Latvia that I think that we helped change. One was, for example, for domestic violence, and actually for protecting children as well, there's a concept in the United States called a restraining order. And this was a completely alien concept in Latvia before we started working there, in which the court can say, you as a husband or a boyfriend are prohibited to be within 100 feet of this person, period. Mm. And so when abuse occurs, a judge can place a restraining order on the abuser to keep them physically apart, so that if this abuser doesn't have to hit the victim, their wife or their girlfriend, but only has to be in the area and they can be arrested. That's a very, very powerful tool to help protect women and children from harm. Unfortunately, you know, there's a tremendously high level of recidivism in terms of after a person has been convicted of committing the crime again. This is especially true of sexual abuse. A person who is a pedophile typically is a pedophile for life. There's very few cases of treatment, effective treatment for this, which is a tragedy, of course, because once these people have acted out on their impulses, have not controlled themselves, it typically is something that's going to be a problem for them and for the community for the rest of that person's life. And even with physical abuse, you know, it is very difficult to prevent men who have beaten women from repeating that. So these are very, you know, I would say very hardwired sorts of behaviors, which of course, you know, oftentimes it's not therapy that's going to help these people. It's not therapy that's going to help the victims. It's literally the justice system that's going to work to incarcerate or to physically keep these people from harming others.
Yeah, I agree with you, and my listeners have had it all. These findings are really disturbing, and I tell you, these are true stories, and thank God for people like Jay Sorensen and his organization, the Kids First Fund organization, that have taken it in their stride to make a difference and make an impact in this region. And there you have it. What we have discussed today paints a grotesque picture of many societies in which children, you know, find themselves. And while the focus of our discussion for today was on the issues pertaining to Moldova, it's not exclusive to that country. And these conditions can be found in other regions or countries as well. Other risk environmental factors include isolation and lack of support. And here we have statements made by abusive parents who talk about their experiences of greater isolation, more loneliness, and even less social support. Now, social isolation may contribute to maltreatment because parents are left on their own and sometimes have less material or emotional support. Some of these parents don't have positive role models or positive parenting role models, as the case may be, and they feel less pressure to conform to conventional and acceptable standards of parenting. Another factor is that of violence in the community. Now, children living in dangerous neighborhoods have been found to be at a higher risk for severe neglect and physical abuse, as well as child sexual victimization, than children found in safer neighborhoods. The greatest concern, however, is that violence may seem an acceptable response or behavior to individuals, especially children who witness it more frequently. And some studies have blamed this development on the media. For instance, the existence of a positive relationship between televised violence and aggressive behaviors, particularly for individuals and kids who watch substantial amounts of TV. Now, ensuring societal and environmental safety is a must if we are to tackle the incidents of child abuse. It's a collective effort, and maybe adopting a grassroots approach for a start might be helpful. Community leaders, traditional rulers, and opinion leaders must pick up their battle axe and join this fight. The government and the international community must renew their resolve in ending child abuse. Families must reprioritize and ensure that all decisions are made in the best interest of the child. Now, this is the much our time can take for today. I'd like to thank Jay for his insightful contributions to today's topic. Thank you very much, Jay.
You're welcome. And if your listeners want to learn more, they can look online on the internet at kidsfirstfund.org.
All right. I wanted to mention that, but thank you for mentioning it. I'll catch you next week. And until then, I want you to take good care of yourself and show some love to a child out there. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening today. Remember, if you miss a show, you can always go to the archives to listen. We hope you'll join us again next week for another episode of A Shield for the Innocent.